This is Yaron Brook, guest speaking on Dr. Leonard Peikoff's podcast. I'm here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. Your real-life questions specifically to current events, including politics, economics, and foreign policy. My answers are posted every other week on Mondays. Leonard will continue to answer questions, but now only on alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes at www.peikoff.com. If you have a question to ask me, simply go to peikoff.com/questions. What is the difference between government regulations and government law? That's a good question. Now, this is my understanding. I'm not a philosopher of law, so this is my, if you will, somewhat simplistic understanding. Government law should be instituted in the protection of individual rights. In the case of the economy, it should be to define property rights and to protect property rights. To define property rights and to protect property rights. And leave everything else alone. So a law would identify a harm being done, objective harm, where force is being used, and outlaw it, right? In one way or another, fraud, and then it would have to apply it to securities, fraud, IP, intellectual property, what constitutes theft and what that means. Regulations are supposed to regulate how you act. They are not to prevent the violation of rights, but they typically are, before an act has ever happened, this is how you are supposed to behave. Not because if you behave that way, you would violate somebody's rights, but some people might, under circumstances, if they behave this way, violate somebody's rights. So you're supposed to, by regulation, do financial statements in a particular way. Because some people, if we just let the market dictate what financial statements were made, some people would commit fraud. So in order to prevent, and I put in quotes, the optionality of committing fraud, people commit fraud anyway, we want to tell you exactly what the financial statement needs to look like. So laws define the violation of rights, the crime. They say, this is what fraud looks like. Regulations say, this is what you must do. Even though we know that there are a whole variety of things that you could do differently without it being fraud, you have to do it this one way. So regulations are imposed before any violation of rights has occurred. They are preemptive. They are preemptive, whereas laws are not preemptive. Now, not all regulations are preemptive, but a majority of regulations are preemptive. They are there to regulate how you use your property without that consideration of whether the use of the property is violating rights or not. That's not the issue. It's how we want you to use your property. Okay, what are my thoughts on initiatives such as free state projects? I don't understand them. I don't get it. What's the point? We will not change this country by showing the world how freedom works. Everybody knows how freedom works. Everybody knows freedom is better than non-freedom. What you need to prove to them is that freedom is good. Freedom is moral. Freedom is just. Freedom is right. So if you took over New Hampshire and you created a capitalist heaven in New Hampshire, you still would have to abide by federal law, so you couldn't be completely free, but at least at the state level. The idea is everybody would want to emulate New Hampshire. Not true. Not true. California would still move towards socialism because ideologically Californians believe in socialism or fascism or whatever we want to call it, statism. This is an ideological battle. It's not a lesson. It's not that you have to existentially show the world. Look at Hong Kong. Look at Singapore. We got plenty of examples. We got plenty of examples. So it's not an issue of providing an example. Now, I don't want to live in New Hampshire. I would much rather live in statist California than a little bit less statist New Hampshire because the weather here is good. And I'm not going to live for the cause. The cause is one of the things I believe in and one of the things I'm going to practice on, but my life is not going to be dictated by it. I'm not going to make my life an example. So if I like the weather in California and I like, you know, the activities that I can do in California and some of the people in California, why would I move to New Hampshire? The focus is my life. I'm not going to sacrifice for some, you know, show the world what a free society looks like. There's plenty of free societies. That's not the problem of the world. The problem of the world is not that they don't know what a free society looks like. The problem of the world is they don't want it. We have to convince them they should want it. Do you find it hard to enjoy all the values we have today, knowing they are in the process of being destroyed by these nihilistic statists as we speak, and our children may end up living under tyranny? That's quite a loaded question. No, I don't. When I'm enjoying values, let's say like music or painting or sculpture, something beautiful, or a beautiful sunset, or a new magnificent skyscraper, or whatever, I try to focus on that. You can't live life if your mental capacity is completely dominated by the world is going to end tomorrow. I mean, even if the world was going to end tomorrow, you would still want to listen to a beautiful Tchaikovsky concerto. What's the one going to do? You got to live the moment. You got to live the moment. You got to live in the now. I'm sounding like a Buddhist now. You got to live in the now. You got to enjoy life. And yes, you got to consider the fact that these values are being destroyed, so you got to embrace them now. They might not exist 20 years from now, so hug them now. I'm thinking of a morbid example. You know, if you know somebody you love is going to die tomorrow, you hug them, you enjoy them, you embrace them, you try to get as much as you can out of them. If you just focus on the loss, then you're losing even before the loss has happened. Now, at the same time, you fight, right? You fight against the nihilists. You fight against tyranny. You fight, and you fight to try to make the lives of your children as good as they can be. And the most important battle we have right now is to prevent tyranny and to save our kids from their fate. But you've got to balance that with being able to enjoy the values that do exist out there. And the fact is that in my case, I enjoy fighting, right? It's like, you know, I watch Creed, the boxing movie, which it's a okay movie, but I didn't enjoy it because I hate boxing. It's so violent, and it's so, why people get a thrill out of punching each other in the face, I don't get that. But I get that they like fighting in a sense of, something's important to me, and I'm going to go all out on it. I just think the best fighting is intellectual fighting, which doesn't actually injure you and is a reflection of being human. You know, so I enjoy the fighting. I enjoy the fight. I enjoy the challenge. And I have to. Otherwise, I couldn't do this job. Is on an optimistic note. When in the future, objectivism becomes a dominant philosophy in the world, will that influence be permanent? Since it has such a strong defense against irrational ideas to invade and corrupt it. Yes and no. That is, it can only be permanent if people are vigilant, if they embrace it, if they continue to hold on to it. And that requires effort. It requires effort. Reason requires effort. Thinking requires effort. Focusing your mind requires effort. To sustain being an objectivist requires effort of an individual. For culture to be a free, capitalist, objectivist culture is going to require effort from many, many, many individuals. From the intellectuals on down, a significant number of people are going to have to exert constant effort. They're going to have to be vigilant. But what fun that would be. That would be a blast if that were a problem. How do we sustain the wonderful world that we have? How do we make sure that another cunt doesn't come around? That would be a fun problem to have. Should an objectivist parent educate his or her children to not be religious? What if they're curious and want to go to church or read in depth about the supernatural? What does it even mean to read in depth about the supernatural? I'm just thinking, there is no depth to the supernatural. It's by definition non-deep. But anyway. I think you educate your kids for the positive, not the negative. You educate your kids to think, to value their senses, to value their mind, to value reason, to value logic, to value the positives. And I think that if you do a good job of that, and if you present religion for what it really is, magic, like in Disney, superstition, that it's not serious, that it's kind of a silly thing people do, then your kids are not going to take it seriously. You should not, in my view, say, oh, you know, kids, there are many religions and the people who are not religious and there's philosophy. Go choose. Go pick. I mean, that's ridiculous. It would be like saying, you know, it's pretty much consensus today that the earth goes around the sun. But, you know, there's some people who believe and have believed in history that the sun goes around the moon. Go out there and pick. You teach them the truth. You teach them what is right. So I'll tell you my story, and these are my kids. So, you know, my eldest son. So we never talked about religion. We never mentioned God ever in our house. It just never came. My wife and I never used the word. There's no practical use for it. And one day my oldest son came home, and he was probably five, right? And he said, what is God bless you? And to him, that was one word, right? Because somebody at school said, God bless you. And at the end of a thing, he was going to Montessori, and it was a secular Montessori, so it was no, but some parent has said that. All right, so what do you do with that, right? So I sat down and said, look, some people believe that there's this thing that you cannot see, you cannot smell, you cannot touch, you cannot know, your senses cannot find, and the senses provide no evidence that it exists, but they believe in it anyway. And they believe they should follow what this entity tells them to do. And they read these books where this is described, and that's what guides them. And he looked at me with this look like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And that was the last conversation we had about religion. It never came up again. And my youngest son, I don't even remember having that conversation. I think my eldest son kind of educated my younger one. I don't think there was ever a conversation about religion. It just didn't make sense. Some of their friends were religious. I think my eldest son at the age of 5 or 6, after we'd had this conversation, kind of did a survey of his class as to who believed in God and who was an atheist. And he discovered his best friend was this little Chinese kid who was an atheist. So they became even closer friends. So it never came up. Now, that's one of the advantages of living in California, by the way, is that these things are not a big deal. And they're not, you know, in those days I was living in Silicon Valley and it wasn't crammed down kids' throats and it wasn't expected that you be religious. So for me, it never came up. But my attitude is not, it's not like reading a book on science and reading a book about the supernatural are the same thing. They have different value. And you as a parent are responsible for conveying that some things have value and some things do not, particularly when they're young, right? If a child is 16 and they want to go and read and go to church and evaluate, fine. But when they're 5, you get to control what they read. You get to control what school they go to. You don't preach atheism, but you don't let other people dictate what your kids study. When my kids got environmentalism at school, I went to the school and complained. And if they still continued, I told my kids it was garbage. Well, if you're open to telling your kids environmentalism or some environmentalism is garbage, then why aren't you free to tell your kids that Christianity is garbage, which it is? So, or Judaism is garbage, which it is. So you have to give your children your best understanding of what is true. Now, you don't just say it that way. You have to explain yourself, and you do it nicely. And you teach them to be respectful of people who disagree with them. So I'll end with this story, right? So my kids are at a friend's house, and with it as well with the parents of the other kids. And the daughter goes in her room, and she tells my youngest son, who I don't know was 4 or 5 also, and she says, look at all the presents Santa gave me. And my youngest kid goes, no, it's not Santa. Your parents gave you that. So she goes to my oldest son and she says, there is a Santa, isn't there? And he went, no, but if you want to believe there's one, that's okay, right? So he had learned the respect part of my message. The younger kid was too young to have acknowledged that, right? you got to respect other people's traditions, other people's beliefs. You don't have to agree with them, and you don't have to respect them so much that you study them. But you don't want to slap them in the face, particularly somebody else's home and so on. You know, I know some objectivist parents who don't reject the idea of Santa. I couldn't do that. I couldn't tell my kids there was a Santa Claus. There isn't one, and they knew there wasn't one. But I understand that some parents want to play that game for a while, and it's a game. But anyway, that's my view. You focus on the positive. You focus on the positive. You don't spend a lot of time on the negative.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.